Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Baba Kama Daf Nem Tes. We are learning today Le'ili Nishmas Eliphlet's daughter Aleha Shalom Nechama Batya Bas Elio Naftali Halevi Michelle Beth Platt. She was in this terrace many years ago. The Neshama Shev and Ali from our learning. Ali is the one who gives me all the art sites. He's coordinating that for the shir. He's been a member of the shir for several cycles. And his daughter Shev and Aliyah from the learning that he has done, we have done for many years together. We also continue to learn for the safety of all the Chayalim, the Kohos HaBitachon, all those in Eretz Yisrael that are being literally Moser Nefesh on our behalf. They should be successful in bringing back the hostages, B'mehera, in good health. And all those in need of Refuah Shleimah should have one, B'mehera. All those still, the families in need of Nechama should have a Nechama from HaKadosh Baruch. Okay, now we had done the Mishnah that began on the bottom of Mem Chesem and Beis. We had finished it off, but let's chaz it over real quickly. So, Shor Shahisa Miskavim, we begin the Mishnah, bottom of Mem Chesem and Beis, four lines from the bottom. Shor Shahisa Miskavim Lechaveru, if you had a shore that intended to go and be Menageach, another shore, we explained yesterday, we'll see in the end of Gemara today, this would be true even if the shore was Menageach, intending to be goring a woman, specifically was pregnant, and the only reason it's telling us here that it was intending to be goring another shore was because of the parallelism of the Mishnah. So this shore went to go and gore another shore, and instead it gored, v'hiko esaisha, it hit a pregnant woman, v'yatsu l'ildea, nebuch she miscarried. So this situation, potu midvei vados, the owner of this shore, the goring shore, doesn't have to pay for the dmei vados. This is something that we learned out previously. Rashi points out in Daf Nun Beis that the pasuk says ubal shore noki means noki mi dmei vados. For Adam, however, shoyi miskavi lechaveiro, if a human being went to Reuven, went to go and hit Shimon, and instead he hit a pregnant woman, v'hikos aisha v'yatzulu l'adela, and nebuch she miscarried. In that situation, mishalim dmei vados, he has to go and pay for the value of the vados. How do we calculate the value of the vados? Ketz mishalim dmei vados. So shomin is so aisha. You evaluate the woman, how much she's worth when she's pregnant, and she's worth less after she gives birth. So you calculate the difference between the two. So let's say, I gave the example yesterday, she was worth $1,100 when she's pregnant, and she's worth $900 after she's pregnant. So then we assign the value to those vlados, Rahman al-Islam, that were miscarried. So we assign them a value of $200. So you take the difference between when she's pregnant and when she's not pregnant, and that is the value of the vlados. And therefore, that's how you go and calculate this Dumei vlados. Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees. So I'm Rav Shimon Gamliel, and we turn to Mem Tesemut Aleph. What you're therefore saying is, Im Kain, Misha Isha Yoledes Mishbachas. You're telling me that a woman is worth less after she gives birth? No, I'm telling you she's worth more after she gives birth because, as we see in the Gemara, there's the dangers of dying in pregnancy. Now, Baruch Hashem, she didn't die during the pregnancy, so therefore, she's actually worth more when she's not pregnant. So therefore, he says, that can't be the way to calculate the Dmei Vlados. El Shomenes of Vlados, Kama Hein Yofin. You just go and see how much somebody would be willing to pay to raise such children and have them as a slave. So what that value is, so that's the value that you would assign to the person Nebuch that caused this woman to be carried, how much you would have to pay. Now, who do you give this payment to? V'nosi labal. So, based upon Pesukim in the Torah, the husband is entitled to get the Dmei Vlados. However, v'im ein labal, if she doesn't have a husband, so then, nosi liyorshav, it goes to the husband's inheritance. It doesn't go to the wife. However, ha'isa shivcho v'nishtachwa, if she was recently a freed woman, she was a shivcho kinanis, and then she became a freed woman. In other words, she didn't have time to have other children, and there is no other relatives of hers, because she's a shivcho that became a Gioret, essentially, and Ger Shinolad Kikotin Shinolad Domi, and therefore there are no relatives, you don't go up at all, and there's nothing down in terms of descendants from her, so therefore, or if she was a Gioret, Mustama Rashi says she married a Ger, and therefore they have no other relatives, and therefore there is nobody to inherit the husband over here, the one who made her pregnant, so then Potter, then the one who was Mazik, the owner of this Shar, he doesn't have to pay anybody, he gets it himself. It's like he's getting it from Hefker, and he therefore owns the money, and therefore he doesn't have to pay it to somebody else. Okay, that's a quick chazar of the Mishnah. Now let's start with the Gemara. And the Gemara starts off with the first question that I alluded to, Taimo de Miskavi Lechaveiro. We're saying over here that the reason why you don't pay is because the ox didn't intend to gore the pregnant woman, it only intended to gore another ox. Implication being, Ho Miskavi Leisha, if the ox had intended to gore a pregnant woman and caused her to miscarry, then in fact, Mishalim Dmei Vlados, the owner of the ox, would have to pay the Dmei Vlados, the value of the miscarried children, to the husband. But that seems to go against what we learned earlier. As we pointed out, we had earlier on Daf Nun Beis, Lema Teftit Yuchta, the Rav Adda Barav, this goes against what Rav Adda Barav had learned, the Bala Shor Noki, Dom Rav Adda Barav, Shivarim, Shiniskavnu Le'isha, pturim in mevlados, based upon that pasuk, he had said that you don't pay the mevlados. So why did our Mishnah say only if you're miskavin to hit another ox, you don't pay? Implication being that if you're miskavin to actually gore the pregnant woman, then you would have to pay. That goes against what we learned. So Gemara says, amalach revad the rabba, it's all parallelism. Hu adin, the same halach would apply, even dafilu niskavnu lo'isha, even if the ox had intended to go and gore the pregnant woman, also still nami pturim in mevlados, there wouldn't be any payment. Aye. Why did it say then miskavin l'chavero? Father Tony Shor show you miskavin l'chavero. That was just parallelism. Because the sefer dealing with a man intending to hit a man and then instead hit the pregnant woman. Adam show you miskavin l'chavero. There the halchi siv krad, because the pasuk says specifically in that situation v'chi yinatzu anashim v'nagifu isha harav yatzu yoladea v'lo yason anoshi anes kasher yishasolov balo isha v'nasan bifli lim. In that situation, it specifically mentions that even though he intended to go and hit another man, Yonatu Anashim, and then the Nogfu Isharah, by accident, he hit the pregnant woman. So there, you had to specifically tell me that that then applies whether he intended to hit the pregnant woman or he didn't intend to hit the pregnant woman. So therefore, Tana Reisha Nami, for parallelism, Shor Shoyim Eskavim L'Chavero. But in fact, Allah is, even the Shoyim Eskavim L'Isha, because Rav Adav or Abba taught us the din, Ubala Shor Naki, so therefore, there would be no payment to Mev Lados in this situation. Now, Omer Rapapa says, what about the following scenario? Shor Shenogach Es HaShivcha V'yotzu Yoladeh. If a Shor damaged a pregnant woman who was a Shivcha Kinanis, and she miscarried. So that situation, you do have Dmei Vlados. That's different. Mishalim Dmei Vlados. Why do you play Dmei Vlados in that situation? My time out. What's the reason? Because Chamra saw the Abrita B'amahu D'Azik. Because in this situation, the Shivcho Kenanis is considered property. And therefore, if she's considered property, so it's no different than if you gored an animal. It's also going to be in that situation that you will be chayat to pay. Because the Amakar, the Pasuk says, Shulachet Po'el Machamar. When Avraham Avinu went to do the Akedis Yitzchak, so he and Yitzchak both saw the Shechina above Har HaMoriah. But Eliezer and Yishmael, who were there, so they didn't see anything. So he said, you sit here with the Chamor because you have halachically the status of the Chamor. I'm Adomin l'Chamor. And therefore, just like if an ox gored a Chamor that was pregnant, there would be damages that you have to pay. So too, with the Shivcho Kenanis, it's a din. It's nothing to do with the value of the person. It has to do with what is the halachic status. And the halachic status is that the Shivcho Kenanis is like property, and therefore the Pasuk of Baal HaShor Naki doesn't apply. We have a different Pesukim that apply, and therefore we would, according to our papa, have to go and pay the Mevlados if it was a Shivcho Kenanis that had been gored and miscarried. Then the Mishnah said, Ketz Mishalim Mevlados, how do we go and calculate this Mevlados? So we had the opinion of the Tanakhama that said, you take the woman when she's pregnant, you take the woman when she's not pregnant, that's worth less, and that difference in her value, let's say 1100 to 900, so then the Mevlados would be 200. So the more questions, why are we calling this Dmei Vlados only? Shvach Vlados Miboyle. That is, there's two separate components over here. One is the actual value of the miscarried babies. But what about the fact that the woman, her appearance looked ruddier, she looked healthier, and therefore she went up in value. So there's two separate evaluations over here. We have Dmei Vlados, which is the actual value of the miscarried babies, and you have the improvement in her that has nothing to do with the actual babies that are inside of her, albeit the pregnancy is what did it, but not the actual babies inside of her. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. Hachanami kamar. So Kate said, Mishalim Dmei Vlados, Vishevach Vlados. The Mishnah is telling us this. There's the two components over here. So you evaluate the woman, Shomana Seisha, Kamihi Yofa Achla Yoda, how much she's worth before she gives birth, and Kamihi Yofa Mish Yoda, and on the open slave market, how much she's worth after she gave birth. And that difference between the two constitutes both the Dmei Vlados and the Shevach Vlados. So it's two separate payments, but they're lumped together here according to the Tanakh of the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah we had, Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel, so according to you, you're saying that the woman goes down in value. I'm saying that she goes up in value after the birth because you don't any longer have the risk of dying in pregnancy. As I pointed out, in those days, unfortunately, the maternal pregnancy death rates were very, very, very high. It could be 10% even higher. So therefore, Rachmana Litzlan, if this woman was pregnant, there's a risk that you lose her. Oh, Baruch Hashem, she's no longer pregnant. So that risk goes away. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that she's actually worth more after she gives birth. So that can't be the way to calculate it. Now, what is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel actually saying? My comment. I gave you one explanation of what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying. So we have two. We have Rabba and Rova. So here we have Rabba. Amar Rabba, Rabba says, Hachimar, this is what Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion in the Mishnah is. V'chi isha mushpachas kodem sheteleid, yoseh miliachas sheteleid. Are you telling me that a woman is worth more when she's pregnant than she's worth after she's pregnant? No, that's not true. V'lo isha mushpachas liachar sheteleid, yoseh mikodem sheteleid. This is the way we understood the Mishnah, the way I explained the Mishnah, is that Rabba holds that Rav Shimon Gamliel says that the risks of the pregnancy itself are high, and therefore the woman's worth more after the pregnancy is over than while she's pregnant. And therefore, that can't be the way to assess the vlados. In my scenario, she's worth 900 when she's pregnant, she's worth 1100 when she's not pregnant, so the vlados are worth negative 200? That can't be the calculation. Ella, Rabba explains, Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, Ella Shaman is of vlados, and also about, no, you evaluate how much a person will be willing to pay to raise such children as I bought them. So no, that's $200. That's what he's willing to pay for them, because he has to raise them until they become able to work for him. So he's willing to pay $200 for such babies, and therefore that's the valuation that we give the vlados. That's the first opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, according to Rabba. That's the way we learn the Mishnah, and we have a brisa to support this. Tani Nami Hachi, the brisa says exactly like this understanding of Rabba. The brisa says, is a woman worth more before she gives birth than after she gives birth? No. Isha mushbachas kodem shetelet yosem liachas shetelet? No, that's not correct. Valo isha mushbachas liachas shetelet yosem yikodem shetelet. She's worth more after she gives birth again because she didn't die during the pregnancy. Elo shaman is of lados and also about. Exactly like Rabbi explained, this is what the Brisa says. You go calculate how much a person would be willing to pay on the open slave market for such babies, and that's the valuation that he would have to pay for the tamei vlados. That's Rabba. Now we have Rabba. Rabba has a totally different understanding of Shimon Gamliel, which will obviously be a stira in Shimon Gamliel, and we'll have to explain that, and we'll see if we can reconcile that as well. So Rabba's opinion differs with Rabba, but we'll see that both of them are correct. Rabba, Amar Hachitani, this is what our Mishnah is trying to tell us. V'chi isha l'misha yoledes mashpachas, is the woman's pregnancy, is that only due to the husband? There's no component of her, and she doesn't have anything that she benefits from the pregnancy. Yes, she goes up in value too. That's the two types of valuations that we had. We had the Shevach Vlados in addition to the Dmei Vlados. So why are we only talking about the Dmei Vlados? Therefore, Elisham and Itzav Vlados and Oselabah. So he says, you go and evaluate the Vlados, how much they're worth, and that goes to the husband. He gets that 100% based upon Psukim. The Shevach Vlados Chokim, but the amount that she went up in the value, so that's divided, that amount that now is taken away because of the pregnancy being undone, because Nebuch, the woman, is miscarrying, so then half of that Shevach Vlados goes to the husband, and half of that goes to her. And the nafkamina would be, if they're not around, who gets that money? Who inherits that money? That's Rava's understanding of Shimon Gamliel, and we have a brisa to support Rava as well. Tani Nami Yochi, the brisa is exactly like Rava said. Our Shimon Gamliel, Shimon says, Zuchi Isha Lemi Isha Yoledes Mishpachas, is it only the husband, so to say, that gets benefit over here from the pregnancy? No, she herself, and she didn't get it all improved. No, the pregnancy itself makes her ruddier. It makes her look better. So therefore, the pregnancy, according to this Bryce, according to Rava, that's the understanding of Shimon Gamliel. So the pregnancy itself has to be compensated for the decrease in her value. Ella, what do you do? So there are different components over here that the woman was never gored by this ox. So you evaluate the actual damage to the woman herself and the tzar that she suffered. Those are separate payments and those go to the woman. Clearly, the nezek and the tzar, they go to the woman. However, the shamanist of Vlados, the actual Dumei Vlados, that goes to the man who impregnated her husband. The Shevach Vlados, and her own personal improvement that now is taken away from the removal of the pregnancy, the Shevach Vlados Cholkin, that goes half to the husband and half to the wife. Oh, that's exactly what Rava said. That's what the Brisa says. Now, there's a machlokis over here in what Rav Shimon Gamliel says, but the two seem to be contradicting to Torah. Kasha to Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon Gamliel. So the two Brises seem to offer different understandings. Never mind that Rava has that understanding, but the two Brises differ. So Rava's Brises and Rava's Brises seem to be contradictory to each other. One says they're not. Lo Kasha, because they're dealing with different scenarios. Kambim and Lakaris, the first Brisa is dealing with a woman that has never given birth before. And therefore, you don't know, will she have successful pregnancy or will she not have a successful pregnancy? The risk is much higher in the firstborn of the woman. And therefore, that price is dealing that her value goes down with pregnancy and actually she'll be worth more after the pregnancy is done. And the second braisa is kan she'enu mevakeres. It's talking about a woman that has previously already given birth. So Baruch Hashem, there's a higher likelihood. We know that the baby will be able to come out. The woman is able to have tolerated a pregnancy already, her heart, etc., her whole body. So therefore, the second braisa we're dealing with, the woman's value going up at the end of the pregnancy, and that's why the two braises aren't contradictory to each other. Okay, now, let's look at this Tanakama in our Mishnah a little bit more. Rabbanan, the Amri Shevach Vlados Nam Lebal, the Chachamim seem to say that not only are the main Vlados going to the husband, but the Shevach Vlados also goes 100% to the husband. So why is that? Right? Rav Shimon Gamliel just pointed out that the Shevach Vlados is Cholkin. So the Tanakama argues with that, and the Tanakama therefore says that not only do the maid vlados go totally to the husband, but the shevach vlados, her improvement, that loss of value also goes totally to the husband. Why? Why did the Chachamim say that the shevach vlados also goes totally to the husband? My taima, so we have the Girsa Kedetan, which applies to the Mishnah, but in the Mesorah Shashi brings down Nos Dalit Tzoch L'Machich Kedetanya, and it's really a Braisa, because Mimash V'Shenemar V'Yotzu Yolodeh, the Pasuk tells us, why did it have to tell she's a pregnant woman? If she miscarried, duh, she must be pregnant. So it says, the nogfu isha v'yatsu yiladeh would have been fine. Why did it have to tell us a pregnant woman miscarried? If you tell me the woman miscarried, I know she was pregnant. So, mimash v'shenemar v'yatsu yiladeh, from the fact it tells us that she's miscarried, so any yodeh she hara, I know that she's pregnant. So why did it have to say the extra words? The Torah doesn't have any extra words. So ma tamudoma isha hara. So that comes to teach us, according to the Tanakama, lom aloch shevach hayroyo mabal. That extra word, hara, comes to teach us that even the shevach of the pregnancy, not only the maid vlados, but even the improvement in the woman, so that loss, so that financial liability, that goes totally to the husband. The owner of the shor has to pay the entire maid vlados and the shevach vlados to the husband because of the extra word, isha hara. No, that's Tanakama's understanding why the word hara is there. No. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel also has to explain the word Isha Hara. It's unnecessary. No, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, what does he do with the word Hara? Hi Hara, my Darish Bey. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel needs it, Miboy Lele Chedetani. He needs it for a different Braisa. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Omer, the Braisa tells us, the Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov Shita is, Li Olam Eino Chayev Achi Yakena Kineged Beis Hayron. That the only time that you're Chayev for causing this miscarriage, if you hit her, Neged, against, opposite, the Beis Hayron. Opposite the area of the womb, the uterus, where the baby is. And what does this braisa really mean? Amar Rapapa, Rapapa says, Lo temo kineged beis haroyon mamish. No, you don't have to do it only in the lower abdomen, right? Only where the uterus is. Not only in the lower part of the abdomen, but if you hit it any place in the abdomen, Elokol hecha, the solik bei shichmo luvlad. Rashi says, shichmo means chamimus. Behind who kineged kol hachalol kulo. The baby, so to say, lives inside the entire abdominal cavity, not just in the lower abdominal cavity. And therefore, wherever there is this shichmo luvlad, somehow this chamimus, this heat over there of the belly, it protects the baby. So anywhere you hit the mother in the abdomen, that will cause the miscarriage, and therefore there'll be the penalty that you have to pay. As opposed to, Rav Papa says, La fuke yad regla. If you gave a zetz to the woman, Rahman Islam, in the arm or in the leg, so delo. In that situation, even if she miscarries, you're not chayv for miscarriage. The miscarriage is unrelated to the blow that you gave. That's how Rabbi Shimon Gamliel understands the word hara. The poskim have a machlokis. How does the Tanakama learn this din? Or does he disagree with this din or not? So that's a machlokis amongst the poskim. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, if we're dealing here with a shivcha v'nishtachra, hoysa shivcha v'nishtachra, o giores potter. In this situation, there are no other descendants. You don't go up at all, because as we said, Eir Shinolat Kikotin Shinolat Dami. So both the true convert or a shivcha kinatis, who essentially becomes like a convert when she's freed, so they don't have any relatives up. There's no father, mother, in halacha, no uncles, aunts, brothers, or sisters. They are kikat and shenolat dami. So you only have descendants going down. But since it was a recently freed woman, that's why Rashi had brought down it was shivcha nishtachra as opposed to a shivcha mishuchreres. So it's to teach us that she was a shivcha that just got released. And the likelihood is that a giorit marries a ger. Not necessarily so, not halachically required, just often that's the likelihood. So therefore, they have no other relatives on either side, and they haven't had other children yet. So therefore, there is no inheritor. So what do you do in this situation? So The Mishnah said, Potter, the one who is Mazik, the owner of the shor, doesn't have to pay anybody because it's a damage that he owes, but he's in possession of it. So therefore, it's like he collected it. We know that the properties of a Gershon is Gaya, and he has no descendants at all, and then he dies. So he dies essentially without any inheritors. No Jewish person could die from birth. A Jewish person from birth always has inheritors. You go back all the way to Yaakov Avinu. We're all related. So there's going to be a Jew someplace in the world that's his inheritor. But a person who starts fresh as a Jew, he's not from birth. He is Nizgayer. So in that situation, it's possible he could have no inheritors. And therefore, anything of his is Hefker. So therefore, the Mazik over here who owes this money, he's the Muchzuk in this money. And therefore, he doesn't have to pay it. That's why it's Potter. Now, Amar Rabba, Rabba says, this din is only true. Lo shanu elo shechaval ba. So the woman was gored during the lifetime of the ger. Her husband was still alive when she was gored. And then, umeis hager, and then did he die. So the husband, so to say, owned this chov in his lifetime. And therefore, when he dies, so the kivan, the chov above, b'chayi hager, zocha b'huger, the husband got this already, even though it's not physically in his possession. The mazik still owes it to him. The owner of the shor has to pay it to him, but he, so to say, has been zocha in this payment, and therefore, when he dies, so he dies without an estate. There is no inheritors, and therefore, zocha behu min hager, and therefore, the mazik, who's the muchzuk in this money, immediately acquires it and doesn't have to pay it. However, the woman got pregnant, then her husband died, and then she got gored. So the husband's not around in this situation. So Rabbi says, in this situation, she is getting the Dmei Vlados. And therefore, then in that situation, where the husband died before the goring, so then she's entitled to the Dmei Vlados. That's Rabbi's opinion. Chista disagrees. Amar Chista, Moridichi. Rashi says Moridichi means Baal Shmuazu Halozeh, that you are the one who said this. Memra, I totally disagree with you. Atu Vlados Tsrari Ninu, are the Vlados considered like Rashi says Kshari Mos, like bags of money, or cash, Hain Shetizaki Bohem in a Hefker, that you just go pick them up from Hefker? How did the woman get this? The woman didn't acquire this like a bundle of money that her husband gave to her. This is a zuchus that the Torah gave to the husband. And therefore, Ruchista says as follows, Ella, Isay Lebal Zochle Rechmona. If there is a husband, the Torah said he's entitled to the Dmei Vlados, but only if there's a husband. Leisay Lebal, if there is no husband, then there is no din of Dmei Vlados Lo, and therefore the wife doesn't get it. So Rabbah and Ruchista have a major machlokas over here. They both agree that if the husband was alive at the time of the goring, then the husband gets it, and then he dies without having any inheritors. The wife doesn't inherit the husband, and therefore the Dmei Vlados, she doesn't get, and the Mazik, he gets to keep it. He's the Muchzuk in it, it's Hefker, and therefore he gets to keep it. But Rabbi and Ruchis have a machlokas, if the husband died after he impregnated his wife, so then the husband died. So now, the question is, are the Dmei Vlados or not? Rabbi says yes, and Rav Chista says no. More questions, Rabbah, who says, yes, there are Dmei Vlados to her in that situation where the husband died before she was gored. Meisvei, the following Brisa seems to disagree with Rabbah. The Brisa says, he calls a isha of Yotzev Yodah. If a woman was in fact hit and Nebuch, she miscarried. So no sinazim gutzal isha, we had this previously, that the woman is entitled to get any payments, the tsar, and the actual damage to her, so that she gets for certain. Utmei Vlados Labal, and the Vlados, the evaluation of the Vlados, that goes to the husband, and the Brisa here now adds, Ein HaBaal, if there is no husband, no sin liyoshev, you give it to the husband's inheritors, because that's his, and if he dies, so it goes to his inheritors. Ein HaIsha, so no sin liyoshev. If there is, the woman dies, so then anything that she was entitled to, such as the designated tsar, goes to her inheritors, in other words, to her father, no sin liyoshev. Now, Haiso Shivcho V'nishtachro, if in fact she was a previous Shivcha Chinanis and now got freed. So again, it is just occurring now. She has no other descendants or Gioris, or she married a Ger, and therefore there are no other descendants over here. Then the Brisa says, Zocha. Now that implies that it's the Mazik who Zocha this over here. In other words, this payment is kept by the Mazik, and it seems to imply, even if this occurred when the husband died before the woman was gored. So this seems to go exactly like Rav Chista and Akash and Rabbah. Shmuel says, how is that a Kashan Rabbah? Rabbah explained the Mishnah in the same way that he would explain the Braisa. Amri, umi adifa mimasnisin. How come we're not learning the Braisa the same way we learned the Mishnah? Why is the Braisa somehow better than the Mishnah? It couldn't learn the Braisa the same way we learned the Mishnah. In fact, you should learn the Braisa the same way we learned the Mishnah. Just like Rabba explained the Mishnah, the Okimna, when Rabba learned the Mishnah, he explained in the following way. If shechaval ba b'chaye ager, if the woman was gored while her husband was alive, and then umeis ager, and then he died, so then the Basik is entitled to keep the money, and he doesn't give it over. But if, in fact, the ger died after he impregnated her, and then she is gored, and she miscarries, so in that situation, it goes to her. So therefore, hochanami. So the brisa can be learned the same way. Shechaval ba b'chaye ager. If she was, in fact, gored while her husband was alive, so then, if umei sager, then the mazik gets to keep the money. But in the case where he died first, after he impregnated her, he died, and then she was gored, then, just like in the Mishnah, so too, Rabba would learn the Braisa. She's entitled to the money. So therefore, this Braisa is not a kasha on Rabba. Alternatively, if you buy Sam, you could say, no, even li'achar misa sager. No, she in fact was gored after her husband impregnated her, and then her husband died, and then she was gored. And we turn to Memtes Amud Beis. How do you learn it this way? When the word said in the Braisa, Zocha, don't read it Zocha, Utni, Zochsa. Now, the simple understanding with this would be that just change the words around. But Tom says you don't have to change the words around to say Zochsa, that she gets it. It means the one who is entitled to it gets it, Zocha. So Tosa says, hey, my gear, Braisa, you don't have to change it without Tosas. You don't have to change around the words of the Braisa. Ela Klomar, Zocha, Mishiesh Lo Zechus. The one who's entitled to get it gets it. And that's, according to Rabba, it would be the woman. Okay, so this Braisa poses no problem to Rabba. Now, let us suggest that this Machlokas Hamaroyim, Rabba Nuchista, is in fact a Machlokas Tanoim. Where do we have a Machlokas Tanoim? Over here, Lemo Kitanoi in the following Braisa. Bas Yisroel Shenisis Leger, a woman marries a ger, V'nisabri Menu, and Baruch Shem Mazel Tov, she's pregnant. However, V'chov Abo B'chayi Hager, but Nebuch, she is damaged, somebody hits her and causes her to miscarry during the lifetime of the ger. Now, this situation, since a person hit her, so there's going to be mevlados. So the Braisa says, no sin mevlados lager. That, in that situation, the ger gets it, because the ger was alive at that point in time, and if he dies then, so then it will go to his inheritors. Fine. No sin mevlados lager. Le'acha misas lager. However, if the ger, who she's married to, impregnated her, and then Nebuch the ger dies, and then she's hit, now we have two different possibilities. One Braisa says, Tani Chod Chayev, that in fact, the Masik has to pay her the Mevlados. And the Tani Chod, and another Braisa says, no potter, that he doesn't have to go and pay her. So this seems to be exactly Rabba and Rav Chisa's opinion. The first Braisa says, Tani Chod Chayev, that seems to go like Rabba. And the second Braisa says, Tani Chod potter, that seems to go like Rav Chisa. So my love, Tanoi Ninu. Let us say this is Machlokas. The first Braisa is Rabba, second Braisa is Rav Chisa. Let us say this is Machlokas Tanoi. Someone says, you're 100% right for Rabba. The Rabba, vade tenoihi. There's no way Rabba can explain the Braisa that says, v'toni chod potter, because he says that the woman is entitled to it. And therefore, there's no way that Rabba could say, both Braisas go like me. And according to Rabba, you're right. One Braisa, toni chod chayiv, that goes like him. And the other Braisa, toni chod potter, he would say that goes like Rav Chisa. So according to Rabba, it definitely is a machlokes tanoim. However, the Gemara says, Ela Rav Chisa says, don't lock me into only holding like the Braisa of Toni Chod HaPotter. Milema Tanoihi, I can hold like both Braisas. I certainly can hold like the Braisa of Toni Chod HaPotter, because that's my Shita. But even the Braisa that says that the Mazik is chayiv to pay her, that could also go like me. Why? Because Lo Kasha, Rav Chisa would say, Ha Rabbanon, the Ha Rishim Gamliel. The two Braisas are two different opinions. The Braisa, it says that the payment goes entirely to the husband, and therefore, the Tani Chod HaPotter, that could be the opinion of the Chachamim, that say nothing goes to her. The Dmei Vlados and the Shvach Vlados both go to the husband. So therefore, Tani Chod HaPotter, if there's no husband, that's it. End of the discussion, it goes to the Mazik, he gets to keep it. However, the other Braisa is Rav Shimon Gamliel. The first Braisa says, Tani Chod HaChayiv, that goes Ha Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says that she is entitled to 50% of the Shvach Vlados. So that goes to her, and therefore Chayiv means that that half goes to her, and that's what it means, Chayiv. Rav Chisa says, this is not necessarily Machlokas Tanoim between Rabba and myself. Now, Mor says, if this is Rav Shimon Gamliel, if the first Braisa, Tani Chod HaChayiv, is Rav Shimon Gamliel, My irio liachar misa. So afilu mechayim nami is lepalgu. So then, why did it specifically give us this scenario if the husband impregnated her and then died, and then you're telling me that she gets half the shvach vlados? No, even if the husband is alive, she's still entitled according to Rishon Lulil to the shvach vlados, half the shvach vlados. So the Gemara says mechayim is lepalgu. No, this is the chiddush that while the husband is alive, then she's only entitled to half of it. But liachar misa, if the husband dies, so then she's in fact entitled to all of the shvach vlados. That's one way to explain over here that Rav Chisda would say it's not a machlokas tanoi. If you buy the same, alternatively, you could say that both the brises, Tony Chod the Chayiv, Tony Chod the Potter, are both going according to the opinion of Rishon Gamliel. Havaha, Rishon Gamliel. And Kam b'shevach vlados, and Kam b'dmei vlados. When you're saying that you're Chayiv, that's talking about the Shevach vlados. She's entitled to the Shevach vlados. And when you're saying Potter, that's talking about the Dmei vlados. And Rishon Gamliel says she's not entitled to Dmei vlados. And therefore, there's another way that Rav Chisda would answer. But this is not a machlokas tanoim. The brisa of Tony Chod Chayiv also goes within the sheet of Chisda, as does the brisa of Tony Chod the Potter. Now, the Gemara says, Amre, we don't like either of these two answers that Rav Chisda is saying to show that it's not a machlokas tanoim. Because, Mishevach Vlados, Lishmad Mei Vlados. He says, from the fact that there's a two payments over here, there seems to be an inconsistency in the two brises, if you want to learn them, like they're the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Because if you're telling me that it goes in accord with the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, and the first explanation that we gave was that before, while the husband's alive, she's entitled to half of the shvach vlados, and then when the husband dies, she's now entitled to the full payment of the shvach vlados, so then she should also be entitled to the full payment of the dmei vlados, but it doesn't say that. Only the Shimon Gamliel, lishma l'rabbanan, and therefore, according to the Chachamim, it would turn out that just like if Shimon Gamliel says that it was chokin, and it was half and half, and now the husband share is gone, and you give it all to the wife. So even the Chachamim would say, okay, if the husband's not there, then you give the entire share to the wife. So this doesn't seem to be a viable way to resolve, according to Rav Chisda, that it's not a machlokes tanoim between him and Rabbah, and to say that Tony Chada Chayil, Tony Chada Potter could be resolved without saying it's a machlokes tanoim. Where it says, yes, it does. Amri lo. Because you could say the two cases are separate. Because shvach vlados, the half that she would be entitled to a shvach vlados, the shaycho yod begavayu. So she has a share already in half of it. So zachi bubukulu. So if the husband isn't there, the husband died before the damage, before she miscarried, was hit. So then, since she's entitled, according to Shimon Lil, to half of that already, so therefore she can schlep along the other half as well. As opposed to the Dmei Vlados, the Lo Shaycha Yod Begavayu, that she's not entitled to at all. If the husband's there, the husband gets 100% of that payment, so therefore, Lo Zach Yabuklau, so she's not entitled to any of it at all. And therefore, there is no stira over here to say that Rav Chisda holds that both prices could go according to him, because you can't bring me a riot for the fact that she gets half of the Shvach Vlados, and therefore she'll get the entire Shvach Vlados, that she also should get the Dmei Vlados. The Dmei Vlados, the Shvach Vlados, two separate things. And therefore, it's possible to say that if she got half the Shvach Vlados while the husband's alive, she should get the 100%, the other half of the Shvach Vlados that her husband was given, the Cholkin, so she should get 100% of that. But that doesn't entitle her to get any of the Dmei Vlados, and therefore there is no stira over here to say the way Rav Chisda tried to learn these two brises. Okay. Now the Gemara asks another question. Boy, minei Rav Yeva Saba mi Rav Nachman. Rav Yeva Saba asks the following shaila from Rav Nachman. What about a ger that was dying without any children, any relatives, and he has certain shtaros? Rashi understands that these shtaros are basically IOUs that this ger is owed by other people. Others learn that these are documents saying that he owns certain properties. They're raias that he owns certain properties. In any event, the ger dies. He has nobody to inherit him. So you grab these shtaros. Hamachzich b'shtaros of shel ger. If you grab the shtaros of a ger, mahu, what's the halacha? Do we say, man demachzich b'shtara? The person who grabbed the shtar didn't want the piece of paper. Adaiti the arahu demachzich. Either it was the IOU, the lien on the properties that IOU represents, or it was the actual document showing that he owns those properties, and that's all the person intended to grab over here. But the din is that the ara is hefker now. Once the ger dies, so all of his properties are considered hefker. He doesn't own them anymore. So the shtar is saying that he owns them are worthless in that situation. They're hefker now. And therefore, since the person attempted to grab onto the value of the shtar's content, not the actual shtar itself. Ushtar nami lo kana. So therefore, since he doesn't acquire the land that the document states would be the owner of this shtar's possession, so he doesn't even acquire the piece of paper itself. Ushtar nami lo kana. Because the lav daite ashtar, he never intended to acquire the paper. He intended to acquire what the paper represented, and that he can't do. Or do you say, no, oduma daite nami ashtar. No, he intended to acquire the paper also. He wanted the content, but in addition, he also acquired the paper of the shtar. So that's a question that Rabbi Yevisabi asked Rav Nachman. So Rav Chista responds, and he says, Amalei, ane mori, what do you think? V'chi lotzor al pi tzluchos tzlochiso hutzarech. What? The guy needs this as a bottle cap? He wants this piece of paper to stuff into a jar and close it off? So Rav Yevisabi said, yeah, that's exactly what I'm asking. Amalei, lotzor v'lotzor. Yeah. Does he acquire this or not? We all agree that he doesn't acquire, at least seemingly, the Gemara seems to say that everybody agrees that he doesn't acquire what the document represents. The only question is, does he or does he not acquire the document? And the Gemara doesn't give us an answer over here that it leaves it unclear. Does he or does he not acquire the piece of paper as a piece of paper so he can use it as a bottle cap, stuff up a flask with the piece of paper. Okay. Amar Rabba. Rabba tells us another din. Mashkino shel Yisrael biyad ger. A ger had lent money to a yid, and he said, okay, I'll lend you $100, give me some security, give me a mashkon. So the yid gave the ger a mashkon, and then umeis ger, and nebuch, the ger then dies. So what's the halach in this situation? Uboy Yisrael acher, a different yid comes along, the hechzikbo, and grabs this mashkon, which belongs to the first yid, and it was in the possession of the ger as a mashkon, and another yid comes along. So Reuven borrowed money from the ger. Reuven gave a mashkon to the ger. And Shimon now, after the death of the ger, went and grabbed the mashkon. He says, everything that the ger owns is hefker. There is no yorish. There's no inheritor over here. He didn't have any children. He doesn't have parents, obviously, because of the famous principle of gerish and this guy, Kosh Nola Dami. So the guy has no inheritors. And therefore, Shimon, when he grabs this mashkon, says, it's hefker and I'm grabbing it. So the Gemara tells us, motzin oso miyada. We take this mashkin away from Shimon and you give it back to its rightful owner, which is Reuven. Why? My timer. Because keep the mislay ger, since the ger died, so the shibud that he had on this mashkin goes away. Paka le shibude. And therefore, it now reverts again and belongs totally to Reuven. It never didn't belong to Reuven, it just was in the possession of Shimon as a mashkin. And therefore, Reuven gets it and not Shimon. But it was the other way around. Mashkino shel ger biyad Yisrael. If the ger had borrowed money from Reuven, and Reuven said to the ger, give me a mashkon. So the ger gave him a mashkon, and now the Reuven has the mashkon of the ger in his possession, and then the ger dies, umesa ger. Now, Shimon comes along, Uboy Yisrael acher, Shimon comes along, the hechzikbo, and he grabs the mashkon from Reuven's possession. So now, you could argue, well, the mashkon belongs to the ger, so therefore, it's hefker, and maybe Shimon does own it entirely. So the Gemara tells us, Rabbah tells us, Zekona kinegim osim. No, Reuven owns this mashkon to the extent of the loan. Let's say the mashkon's worth $200, it was a vase, and Reuven had only lent the ger $100, so the mashkon was worth more than the loan. So in this situation, Reuven's entitled to go and take $100 from the mashkon and repay the loan that he gave to the ger. And then Shimon, when he grabbed this mashkon, he grabbed the vase. So when they sell it, so 100 goes to Reuven and the other 100 goes to him. So Zekonah Kinegim Osa, Reuven gets what he's entitled to for the amount that he lent, and anything that's left over, Zekonah Esashar, Shimon, who now grabbed it, gets the rest of the value of the mashkon after you paid off the debt that the ger had borrowed money from Reuven. Now, Vamai, why is that so? Why don't we say that Reuven, who's the mashkon was in his possession, so tikni lechatzero, let his chatzer go and acquire the rest of the value of the mashkon. So the $100 that he's owed, everybody agrees that he gets. But the other 100, which he isn't owed technically, let his property have acquired that, and he should acquire it before Shimon grabbed it. Vamai, tikni lechatzero. After all, the Omer of Yossi Bar Chanina, Chatzero Shaladim Kodolo Shalomi Daito. Even though Reuven doesn't know anything about the ger's death and doesn't tell his courtyard, so to say, go and acquire this on my behalf, your courtyard acquires stuff on your behalf, even if you don't know about it. So the question is, why doesn't Reuven get the entire $200 vase instead of only getting $100 to pay off his debt and the other 100 Shimon got because he grabbed it first? So Gemara says, no. Amre Hokmai Skinner, when did the Braises say that Shimon gets the second 100 of the $200 vase? That's only the Leise. That's when Reuven wasn't in town. And the din is, kol hecho de isa l'di day, that the only time his yard acquires it on his behalf is if he was there himself, and the ibai mikne matzi kani. If he wanted to, he could go and take the vase himself and acquire it. And in that situation, his yard can acquire it for him. Kanya le nami chatzero. If he could have gotten it, so he can say, let my yard acquire it for me. So that's when he's there. But Kolecha the Lady, he's not there. So he can't go and grab it himself. So in that situation, his yard can't grab it for him. The boy so nami lukanya. Since he wasn't there to go and grab it, his yard can't grab it for him. So if he's there, then his yard can grab it for him even without his knowing about it. But if he's not there, when he could not have grabbed it himself, then his yard can't function on his behalf. And therefore, the Shimon in this situation will get the second 100 of the vase's value. How do we pass him? So the Gemara says, the leise bechatzero, the lo kona. So the din is that if the person isn't there, the leise bechatzero, Reuven's not there, so then his yard can't go and acquire for it exactly like we just brought down. But if he is there, so then the yard can acquire for him even if it's without his knowledge. Okay, let's go to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, Hachofer bor b'shus hayochid. If a person goes and digs a bor in his own private property, upsach l'rishus harabim. He digs on an angle, and the opening is actually in the rishus harabim. The bottom of the bor is his property. It's like on an angle, and you slide down through it. And you land in the person who dug the bor's property. But the entranceway is in the rishus harabim, or vice versa. Over rishus harabim, he opened it up. He opened it up in the Rishus HaYachid, and it's slanted the other way, so the bottom of it belongs to the Rishus HaRabim. Or, Rishus HaYachid, Upsach Rishus HaYachid Acher. He opened it up in somebody else's Rishus HaYachid, and then it went into, the bottom was his Rishus HaYachid. And then he's mafker it. In all three of these cases, chayev, he is chayev, because it was his bar that is in the Rishus HaRabim. He didn't have the right to go and dig it over there, or if he's mafker it, he had to go and fill it up, so therefore it's still considered his bar, and therefore anybody that falls into it, he's going to have to pay for the damages to that person or to that animal. Okay, now, Morris starts off and tells us, Tana Rabbanon, the Braisa brings down a chofer bor b'shus hayochid. The Braisa says, if you dig a bor in the shus hayochid, upsoch l'shus harabim, but the opening is in the shus harabim, the Marshal deletes the parentheses word, so we'll delete it as well. So the din is chayev. In this situation, where he opened up the bor in his own shus hayochid, however, the opening was in the shus harabim, so the bottom of the bor is in the shus of himself, but the opening is in the public area, chayiv, if somebody falls into it. V'zeh bar omer b'torah, divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Divrei Shmuel says, this is a classic case of a person digging a bar in the Rishus HaRabim, and you're chayiv for the damages that occur in that Rishus HaRabim if an animal or a person falls into that bar. Rabbi Kiva disagrees. Rabbi Kiva omer, no, hivkir rishuso, v'lo hivkir baro. If he was mafkir his rishus, but he wasn't mafkir the bar, so he dug a bar originally his own rishus, and then he says, everybody else is allowed to walk here. I'm keeping myself the possession of the bar, however, then if somebody falls into it, zel abar ha'amr b'torah. This is the bar rishus harabim that the Torah is referring to. Now, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva are arguing over here. Amar Rabba, Rabba says, b'bar b'shus harabim, everybody agrees, kuli amalo pligi, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, they don't disagree in a situation where it was a bar in the shus harabim, the mechayiv. Everybody agrees that you chayiv. Even Rabbi Kiva says you chayiv in that situation. Why? My time up. Amar Kiva, because the pasuk says, ki yiftach. In one pasuk it says, v'chi yiftach ish bar, and then it says, oh, ki yichra ish bar. It uses both the shonos, ki yiftach, if you open up a bar, that means if you will uncover a bar that was already there, it had a cover on it, had a manhole cover on it, and you take off the manhole cover. Or the chiyikra, you actually dug it. Now, im al pesicha chayiv, just by removing the manhole cover, you are going to be chayiv for any damages that occur. So, alachas kama v'chama, al kariya, the actual digging of the bar, lo kol shekein, shouldn't you be chayiv? So why does the pasuk have to tell us, chiyiv tach ish bar, o chiyikra ish bar? Seems the chiyikra ish bar is unnecessary. Oh, Ella, the Torah is coming to teach us, shall iske pesicha, v'al iske kriya barlo. The reason why the person is chayiv doesn't make any difference whether he opened up an existing bar or he dug a bar. So it has nothing to do with owning it. It's the fact that you uncovered it or dug it, but you don't have to own it. And therefore, that's why we have the double lashon, ki yichre and ki yiftach. Kiyichra should be unnecessary, but coming to teach us that you don't have to own it. So everybody agrees to that, both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Lo nechluku, where's the machlokus between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel? Lo nechluku ele, and we turn to Nunamad Aleph. the bar birishuso, when you're dealing with the bar that still remains in that person's possession. So Rabbi Akiva Savar, bar birishuso nami chayv, even though you still own the bar, you can't say, well, listen, sorry, you guys didn't have a right to fall into my bar, it's in my possession. No, Rabbi Akiva says, no, tisiv bal habar. It tells us in the pasuk, bal habar yishalim, and therefore you have to pay, you're the owner of the bar. Bobar, the isle balam kamarachmana, even in that situation where it's your private bar and they fall into it, you still have to pay. Rabbi Shmuel Savar, no, Baal Hatakol, it means the one who is responsible for this over here, but Lav Dafkin, it means you have to own it. And therefore, that's the source of the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. How you dash in the words, Baal HaBor Yishalim. Rabbi Akiva says it's the actual owner of the bar, and Rabbi Shmuel says it's the one who caused this problem to be there, but Lav Dafkin, he still has to own it. No, according to Rabbi Akiva, Elamai Zeu HaBor Omer B'Torah, the Kom Rabbi Akiva. Why did Rabbi Akiva say this is the bar that the Torah is talking about? According to Rabbi Akiva, he holds the person also to be chayiv in the case of Rabbi Shmuel. So Gemara says, "Zeh bar shepasach ba kos of techila l'tashlum." This is the bar that the Torah refers to originally that you have to pay, and that's why it refers to this as the one that this is the bar that Rabbi Akiva says is mentioned in the Torah. Not that the other one is not, but this is the first one that's mentioned, and that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and that's the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. We'll stop over here, but we'll see that there are those that disagree with this understanding of the machlokas. With this, we conclude today's share.